Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Good evening, John.
Good evening, Mr. Ben, and hi, everybody.
Hi, everyone, indeed. As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and our text number 087-977-1032. Standard text rates apply. That's 087-977-1032. As usual, lots to get through. We'll talk about the Artemis 1 mission in a moment, which was due for launch last Monday at lunchtime. I was ready to tune in to NASA TV or ESA TV to watch one of them, but it was scrubbed. We'll get to that in a moment. But first, what to see in the night sky, John?
Well, it starts with the moon. Somebody was out moon watching.
Trying.
Sunday, it's one of those elusive type of things, isn't it, really? The first, just after the new moon on Saturday, you're there on Sunday trying to spot a what percentage?
Two and a half percent new crescent moon. Yeah. So at that stage, as you can imagine, it's very close to the sun. And as we mentioned here last week, that last Sunday, when we mentioned it last Tuesday, that on Sunday, which was 2 days ago, that the sun was going to set at about 8:30 and the moon about 40 minutes after that at 10 past 9. And went out looking for a clear horizon. I thought I was onto a loser because, well, I was onto a loser as it turned out, but it was very cloudy. But it was nice out and I was at the end of, I went down to Dunleary onto the East Pier. And if you go far enough out there, onto the pier, you don't have to go all the way to the end. There's a nice clear horizon. There's a few low buildings in the distance and towards the city. But yeah, I couldn't. I had my camera and tripod. I was ready. I looked the part.
I was quite interested.
And binoculars, and I ended up taking photographs of seagulls and the big cruiser in the bay. I couldn't even. The sun, the clouds did start to break up, John, but. But they were not near the horizon, and in fact, I couldn't even see the sun, never mind a 2.5% crescent moon. Yeah, well, there's always next month.
There's always tomorrow, the next day.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, it's good fun. I liked that particular time. About 4%, I think you'll just about get to see. And it's just, if the time is right, just running along the horizon as well, you get a particular light, which is magnificent to see as well. Let's have a quick look around the planets at the moment. So Mercury is fading and sinking very low into the sunset glow, so you're not going to see it very easily. You can try scanning it with binoculars or one of these wide-field telescopes for about 20 to 30 minutes after sunset. Look just above the horizon, a little left of due west. And again, we'd like to wish you a very good look on that one. So Venus, magnitude of -3.9 in Leo. It rises about half an hour after dawn begins. And as dawn brightens, look for it very, very low in the east. Mars, unfortunately, it's quite dim. It's only 0.1 in Taurus. And it rises just after 11:04 p.m. This evening. And it's about 10 arc seconds in apparent diameter, so it's quite dim as well. Now, I was out watching the sky over the last couple of nights. Last night in particular was very, very nice, good and clear. And I had to have a little think as to which planet I was looking at. So the one that's really, really bright in the sky is Jupiter at the moment at -2.8. And it stands highest in the south around 2 to 3 a.m., in daylight saving time, of course. And in a telescope, Jupiter is about 49 arc seconds wide, nearly its maximum possible. So, a very good thing to watch. And it was a fine sight last night as well. Got to see a couple of shooters as well, just totally by accident. One just went through the jaws of Cassiopeia, just on the right-hand side through the last two stars. And the other one, I just turned direction, and one went was way over in the west. So where they came from, I'm not quite sure.
I was going to say, because the Auriga's meteor shower peaks on Thursday. Do you think it came from, if you can remember, did it come from Auriga?
Both pretty well directly overhead, but one went through the Cassiopeia, just through the W, and the other one was over to the west a little bit. Still pretty high. I think there's just a rogue one here and there, but it was good. I'd like to see two, at least. This happened in about 5 minutes as well, which is my lucky night, really. So, and just before we finish, Saturn, still pretty dim, and it was at opposition on August the 14th. And now you can spot it in the southeast in late twilight. It's higher later in the evening force, and it's highest and the best in the south around 11 p.m. to midnightish. There we go. And again, the two elusive ones, Uranus and Neptune, very, very dim. And you can see Uranus just to the west of Mars before dawn, if you're looking for a pointer. And Neptune rises in the evening twilight west of Jupiter. So the planets do move around there. And talking about planets, one of them is doing a funny retrograde.
Retrograde Uranus.
It stopped in the skies, I think. So we'll get to that in just a moment. And if you were interested in the International Space Station, the 15th of September is the time for it until October the 4th. And we'll give you the times a little bit closer to the time. So looking forward to that again.
Thank you, John, for that. Of course, that's when the International Space Station is back in the evening skies. It is in Irish morning skies at the moment. In fact, John, if you're up at 5:15 tomorrow morning and it's clear sky, you might catch it a bit early for me. We spoke about the moon. Yes, the 2% moon on Sunday, which I didn't quite catch. It is now a 12% waxing crescent moon, and it's currently up, but it will be setting in about an hour and 20 minutes from now. Rising again tomorrow, just after 11 a.m. at that stage, it'll be up to 17% waxing crescent. It'll be due south about 4:30. At that stage, it'll be 19%, and then setting tomorrow at 9:44 p.m., and at that stage, it'll be a 21% waxing crescent moon as we head to the first quarter moon, which will be on Saturday the 3rd, early in the morning, to be precise. The sun rises tomorrow in Dublin at 6:32 a.m., which is 12 minutes later than a week ago, crossing the meridian at 1:25 p.m., 2 minutes earlier than a week ago. And the sun sets tomorrow in Dublin at 8:17 p.m., which, John, is a whole 16 minutes earlier than a week ago. Mm-hmm. And from then on, we have civil twilight until just about 5 minutes to nine, and from then to... And then we have nautical twilight until about 20 minutes to 10. And we have that nautical, or after nautical twilight, then of course we have astronomical twilight. And that will end, and nighttime begin, at 10:30 p.m. So what that means is tomorrow there'll be 4 minutes and 4 seconds less daylight than today, when we'll have 13 hours and 44 minutes between sunrise and sunset, which is a whole 28 minutes less daylight than a week ago. Oh, by the way, John, just going back to tonight and Mars, might be a bit of a pointer for you. If you know the Pleiades, M45, and Aldebaran, that bright object, roughly halfway between them, is Mars. So that's a good pointer for you. And then, as I mentioned earlier, too, on Thursday the 1st, the Auriga's meteor shower peaks. And on Sunday the 4th, Venus is at perihelion. Mm-hmm. It's nearest to the sun in its orbit. So that's the sun, moon, and stars for the moment.
Well, nearly there. One more just interesting, a little note of interest. If you're into occultations, fancy word for you. September the 14th, the moon will occult, which will pass in front of the planet Uranus. Now, unfortunately, because the moon is 78% lit, it's going to be a really difficult thing to see, although it's an extremely rare occultation event that will last roughly 47 minutes if you're into that. You're going to need a small telescope to see this, and even binoculars would probably not be good enough to see this as well. So the time to see it here in Ireland, plus or minus 5 or 10 minutes is around 10:30 p.m. So set yourself up with your telescope just about half an hour before that, and you'll have a little bit of fun finding Uranus so close to the bright moon. So it's going to be about 10 degrees above the east horizon. The east horizon, yeah, okay. So that's a thing for September the 14th, and that'll be a bit of fun if you're into a bit of trying to find something.
That's a nice little challenge. Mm-hmm. I did see the moon occult the planet before it. I'm sure it was Saturn. It was maybe 15 or 20 years ago. About an hour, and it just disappears on one limb, and it was about an hour later, then it just reappeared on the right-hand side.
on the right-hand side of the moon.
Yeah. That was interesting. So some people got some nice photographs of that, where you can see the moon, Saturn, looking very small. Of course, it's perspective, because Saturn is many times bigger than the moon, thousands of times wider than the moon. And see little, it appears like a little Saturn, just on the edge of the moon, with its rings embedded into the surface of the moon, or so it. Yeah. So it appears.
Now let's talk about the elephant in the room.
Artemis?
Yeah. I was really looking forward to this. I had myself set up and everything for lunchtime yesterday. And 40 minutes before the launch was due of the Artemis. Now what's the correct way of pronouncing this? A lot of people call it Artemis now. Artemis 1, the moon rocket launch.
Artemis or Artemis? Artemis.
Yeah, well we like it. Sounds better with Artemis, so we'll keep that. So Cape Canaveral was the place where this was supposed to have happened, and due to, I think you heard Leo Enright say there was a hydrogen leak.
Yes.
Yeah, that, and they
small leak.
No, you don't want any leaks.
Certainly not hydrogen, no. And they couldn't couldn't get the temperature right in the tanks as well, I believe. But we have some more information on that. As you mentioned, John, it was 40 minutes before liftoff and the planned liftoff, and they decided to scrub it and check it out. They're going to investigate it. And the next earliest opportunity is Friday at, I think I have the time here. I'm not so sure.
Did they give us the time? They did. There's only quite a short window of opportunity to do that and get into the right trajectory, so they might have to wait again. But the problem seemingly was in engine number 3, and there was a feared crack, and it followed concerns about the liquid hydrogen leak in the rocket, which is absolutely not recommended. So it actually appeared seemingly during the fueling process. And it was similar to one that occurred during the fueling test early on this year. So whether we've got enough time to get this back in business again, we're just not sure. So we just have to wait and see. So no doubt there, weather permitting, of course, on Friday.
Yeah, I think NASA going to have a press conference later this evening, 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So it's about 1 a.m. our time. To give an update on the issue and when they hope to launch it again. Friday the 2nd is a possibility, and after that, then next Monday, September the 5th, is also an alternative launch date. I see the U.S. Vice President, Kamala Harris, she went down specially to see her. She went down on Air Force 2, landed just in time to see nothing, and I believe she turned around and
flew home again.
And flew back to Washington, D.C. That's the thing, of course, too. I'd love to see a launch. But, again, they are unpredictable because, you know, you could go all the way to Florida and have a week or 10 days booked off on your holidays and be postponed. You have to go home and you could miss it by hours after going all to that expense of time and trouble.
Going back to one of the earlier shuttle missions, my granddad was over because we have relatives in Texas and around the Houston area, and he got to see a shuttle launch. It actually didn't mean anything to him. It was most incredible. It just looked like a rocket going into the sky, and that was it. But imagine seeing something like that and feel the vibration of everything around you. So with a bit of luck, it might get to fly this week on Friday, Again, we'll just keep an eye. I suppose we'll have to keep an eye on our Google.
Well, they can't take, as you say, they can't take any chances. Yep. There's one as the, not the crew, but one person in NASA says, well, you know, it's a brand new vehicle. It has 1 million parts to it. All of them have to work perfectly.
Yeah.
And you have to make sure everything is okay before you, and that's why there's no crew on this one. But it's going off to the moon.
Yeah.
And around further past the moon than any Apollo rocket has gone, so it'll be, so then when Artemis 2 comes along, with that will have some people on it. They will be the people who will have gone further from the Earth than any other people, astronauts. I think the name is very good because, as you remember, the first moon missions, the lunar missions, were the Apollo. Apollo, of course, was a, wasn't he a Greek god? A Roman god? Uh-huh. Was he Greek, I think?
Greek.
But Artemis was his twin sister. So I think it's very appropriate that they call this program Artemis. Or Artemis. No, Artemis.
Yeah, Artemis must sound much
and,
better.
And especially as it's planned that, sticking with the female theme of it, that there will be the first, on the Artemis 3, there will be the first woman, female, to walk on the moon.
There you go. Now, the program itself is, for those of you who don't really know or haven't looked to see exactly what it is, it's a robotic and a human moon exploration program led by, of course, the United States Space Agency, that's NASA, and it involves three other partner agencies, the European Space Agency, the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency, which is known as JAXA, and the Canadian Space Agency, CSA. And if successful, there's lots of fingers crossed in this, the Artemis program will re-establish a human presence on the moon for the first time since Apollo, since the Apollo 17 mission, which was one of the last, which was the last one mission in 1972. So it is a collaboration of all the space agencies and companies around the world. And it was established first in 2017 during the Trump administration, and there are a million parts belonging to this gadget, so a lot of people are involved in this. So Artemis 1, of course, is the one that they're going to launch first on Friday with a bit of luck, and it has the robots and mannequins on board, which is very exciting. And Artemis 2 launch will take place in 2024, which is quite a good bit ahead, and their mission is to orbit the moon a few times and then fly back again. And the Artemis 3, which is a crewed lunar landing in 2025. All of these seem to be just way, way so far in the distance. It's hard to get your to get the grip on it. And the Artemis 4 is the docking with the Lunar Gateway in 2027. So things will come round pretty quickly. We'll have plenty of time to blink.
So it's planned to have Gateway in operation by 2027.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And then future yearly landings on the moon thereafter. So there we go, starting on Friday, fingers crossed. All the robots and mannequins aboard, I suppose they use the mannequins to see all the vibration levels and things, because this is one powerful rocket.
And they have radiation, just measuring the radiation as well, see what type of, how much of radiation and cosmic rays or whatever gets through the capsule. Now, the Gateway, is, of course, is a space station and a landing, or a, what should we call it, somewhere in between. They're going to go to the Gateway, which is going to be a, basically a space station orbiting the moon before they all pop down to the surface and may be used as a short stop-off point before they go to Mars. A bit like the old flights between Dublin and New York, stopping off just down the road in Shannon before they head off on their 6 hours. Now, speaking of space stations, the ISS. What about the trash? Who takes out the bins on the ISS?
Yeah, there's a new gadget being invented at the moment. Is it a trash collector or trash something or other?
A trash compactor, isn't
compactor,
it?
Compactor, that's the one. It? Yeah, the compactor. I was looking for that big
one. Well, haven't they already been invented?
Yeah, well, they have, but they haven't been invented in space yet. So they have to get themselves ready. So I'm not sure who's involved in the space the compactor just yet. But this is the award, the contract award has been to demonstrate the trash compacting system for the ISS, and it's awarded to a company called Sierra Nevada Corporation of Madison in Wisconsin. So, to develop and demonstrate a microgravity compactable trash compaction and processing system. So, that'll be interesting to see. So, they have a budget of almost $14 million. And they have to make this performance from September the 1st, 2022 through August the 31st, 2027 to spend all this money. And I don't think there's going to be much of a problem to do that. That'll be fun.
Thank you, John. Our text number, as ever, is 0879771032. And our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. And, of course, we're also available on the live stream, dublincityfm.ie, and wherever you get your podcasts. I think it's Encyclopedia, Annika. Mm-hmm. He says USVP, that's Vice President. Yeah. I presume he's talking about, is in charge of NASA.
Yeah.
Is that true?
I think that is not true, the administrator of NASA.
But that's the book stops with her.
Yeah, and then goes to the top for the final word from himself.
Mr. Joe, at the moment. Yeah. Okay, thank you for that.
Here's something interesting for you now. The Allen Telescope Array in California, and it's an alien hunting array, so that's very good. The Allen Telescope, and it's the alien hunting array, has caught, I'm not sure by accident, a signal from Voyager 1 from interstellar space, which is very, very interesting now. Of course, it was launched 45 years ago, and is currently speeding towards the outer edges of the solar system. At 40-odd thousand miles per hour. How long more will this go? It's 45 now. Will it reach 50? That's the question. The little generator that it has, the little is it plutonium?
Not unless there's a... Yeah, but that's used to send radio signals back and information back. It won't go. It'll never go any faster or slower unless a force is applied one way or the other.
That's right.
Not the laws of... first law of thermodynamics or something like that. I've forgotten it.
Imagine seeing something whistling past at 40,000.
Would you see it?
That's the thing. I've been at the motor cycle racing up north when it was on the Northwest 200. And to watch somebody come down into hill into Port Rush at 232 miles an hour, standing in a gateway, it's unbelievable.
Oh, my God.
It's unbelievable. And then they had to put a chicane in, which slowed them down a bit. But the first earlier days, 232 miles an hour. Miles an hour, yeah. And that was fast. So what is 40,000 miles per hour?
How are you supposed to react if you see? Should we do a sports program instead?
Maybe we will, yeah. It's incredible to watch and well worth it if we can get to some of these type things. So the detection of Voyager 1, which is the farthest human-made object with the refurbished Allen Telescope Array, is an excellent display of the telescope's capabilities and strengths. So this is good news for the telescope itself. And it's the representation of an outstanding and hard work team put by the ATA team since the start of the refurbishment program in 2019. So it's good to keep in touch. It's good to talk. That's what it is.
Thank you, John. Now, apparently a new study of zircon crystals from the Earth's oldest continents indicate that the formation of the Earth's continental crust goes through cycles with periods of increased crust production roughly every 200 million years, which corresponds with the solar system's transit through the four primary spiral arms of the galaxy. According to a new study, regions of space with dense interstellar clouds may send more high-energy comets crashing to the surface of Earth, seeding enhanced production of continental crust. Now, you may say, well, what the hell does all that mean? But Earth remains the only planet we know that hosts continents and active plate tectonics, and the study shows they took samples of these zircon crystals from two places on Earth. One is in North America and one in Australia. And in both locations, the decay of uranium and zircon crystals has been used to establish a timeline of formation spanning a period of roughly 2.8 to 3.8 billion years ago during the Archean eon. I never heard of that. And they used hafnium isotopes within the zircon to identify periods of time when all these things happened. Now, what they're saying is that this, let's put it this way. The Milky Way and the solar system are all moving. The Milky Way, of course, we're spinning around the galaxy center. They're moving at different speeds. The spiral arms of the Milky Way are traveling at 210 kilometers a second, and the sun is cruising along at about 240 kilometers per second, meaning that it's surfacing in and out of the spiral arms. So what they're thinking is that when it crashes, for want of a better word, into the spiral arms where there's more gas and dust and material, and that causes perturbations in those objects way out there in the Oort cloud, that it sends, sending comets and other material into, that would crash into the Earth, and that's where the material from the, basically the continents formed.
Mm-hmm.
There is a correlation between, and it seems to be a very strong correlation, but it's, again, one of these studies that needs a lot more work, but it's interesting that the two of them align up, and it's it's certainly a plausible explanation for what's happening.
True. Now, we did speak about wormholes just before we came on air. We're going to have to leave that to next week. But if you're interested in a ridiculously detailed image of the moon for just celebrating the Artemis launch, two astrophotographers have captured a spectacular photo of the moon with huge resolution of 174 megapixels. That's even bigger than your camera. Of the boats and ships and birds and things like that. The photo itself is called The Hunt for Artemis, and it is a tribute to NASA's Artemis 1 moon mission. And I caught this earlier on today. It appeared a couple of days ago, actually, but I only saw this. But the picture itself, however the way they've done it, is absolutely mind-boggling with the detail as well. So anyway, that is it, unfortunately, for this evening, Mr. Ben.
Thank you, John, for that. And also, of course, for your news item. Don't forget our email address. You can write to us anytime, day or night. It's astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And thanks again, John, for your news items there. And to James Sweeney, too, and to Connor Lennon. But that's all for me, Ben Emmett, from this edition of the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Hello China. 9 o'clock, it's Threads with Bren Lyon. At 11 p.m., we have Nigel Wood with his world music program called Ear to the Globe. And at midnight until 2 a.m., we have Dave Barry with his jazz, blues, and soul in a program called After Hours. But please join myself and John at the same time next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening, and say goodnight, John.
And say goodnight, John. Good night.
Good night, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.